Hello and welcome to iScience. I'm Greg Jackson, and for this podcast, I'm on a mission to find out about the psychology of crowd behaviour. We've heard all about the supposed negative things crowds do, be it in mobs, protesters, as football hooligans, and even those caught up in mass emergencies. But do crowds really act hysterically when in a potentially fatal situation? Do they push, shove, and trample one another? I've come to meet the man who would say no firmly to all of the above. He is Dr. Chris Cocking, a self-confessed academic equivalent of an ambulance chaser from the School of Nursing and Midwifery at the University of Brighton. First off, Chris, tell me why your seminar today is called Don't Panic.
Well, the phrase don't panic is popularised through Dad's Army, but I think it's relevant with a lot of views of crowd management is because there's this idea that crowds are prone to panic, and so all of your crowd management strategies should be based upon that fear and should be stopping crowds panicking, because if crowds do panic, then you have mayhem, disaster. I would say it's a pointless thing to say for two reasons. You should never say don't panic. Firstly, because people don't do it anyway, so there's no point saying it. But also, secondly, saying don't panic to people might make them think that there is some reason why they should be panicking. And not that that will make them panic, but it will make them anxious. Treating crowds with more respect and giving them more information and trusting them more to deal with the information, I think, would be better, rather than saying don't panic, because it's too loaded and it has too many connotations.
You mentioned in your seminar today the concept of crowd myths, an element of which is when crowds are faced with an uncertain situation, they supposedly, I quote, stampede. You hold this to be wrong. Can you talk me through why that is?
Well, I don't think stampeding should be used as a description of crowd behaviour, because it has very animalistic connotations. When you talk about stampede, you're talking about herds of cattle stampeding. So it shows, I think, ideological biases against crowds, but also it just doesn't happen. Crowds do not stampede in the same way as animals. If people fall over in crowds when there's a crowd surge, it's because of the crowd density. And if people are able to pick up the people, they will. When people get trampled underfoot, which is very, very rare, it's because the crowd density is so high that people are not physically able to pick them up, and you have what's known as a domino effect, where one person falls and everyone else falls on top of them. This especially happens down stairways, because they're no longer in physical control of their bodies, but psychologically they're still very much in control, and that's a physical problem rather than a psychological problem.
To illustrate your point of how mass panic is rare, we found an image of September the 11th, which initially might be perceived as a panic-stricken crowd. It's a photo taken after the towers have collapsed, and there is a dust cloud enveloping a crowd of perhaps 40 people.
If you look in close detail at what people are doing in the photo, I think it shows the opposite. You have a woman who is carrying bags of her shopping and high heels. If she was panicking, why wouldn't she drop the bags, kick off the high heels and run as fast as possible? Any idea that this is a stampede is not supported at all by any of the evidence, because no one's fallen down, no one's being trampled on.
Is there a consensus on your theory?
Amongst social psychologists in the UK, yes, but unfortunately, often when descriptions of crowds are used by the media, they'll go to people who don't have a background in the psychology of crowd behaviour. They'll go to biologists or evolutionary psychologists who'll talk about herding behaviour of cattle or bees, and I just don't think it's appropriate. There's very few people who specialise in the study of crowd behaviour, and often when the media talk to people, they don't always talk to the people with a background in it.
In light of the arrests of the Italian seismologists in October, do you think the role of scientists should extend further than disseminating information through the media, especially in the context of mass emergencies and disasters?
Scientists shouldn't, and I don't think they do, rely entirely on the media for their dissemination. They obviously have their uses and their roles, but in terms of the specific question about the seismologists, I don't know the full details about it. But I suspect it illustrates the problem between informing people of risks and then being responsible for the information you give out. Scientists can only provide the information. They can't provide the policy and the legislation, and they probably shouldn't either.
Thank you, Chris. I feel like I've learnt a lot tonight. There's something about being tucked away in a cosy traditional English pub that goes so brilliantly with discussing ideas and concepts. And I'm not the only one to think this. Tonight, the cosy science meeting was so ram-packed, guests sat on the floor just to get a glimpse of the action. It's funny to think that even though I'm rammed into a room like sardines with complete strangers, there's not a resonance of panic running through my veins. It's quite the opposite, actually. Thank you for listening to this iScience podcast. That's all we've got time for today. If you'd like to know more about cosy science meetings, you can find their website listed below.